I'm kind of going around the track in my head, and then thinking, okay, I'm going to break here. And even at like the start of a race, I think, okay, on the first lap, I know everyone's going to go there. I can try and make a move somewhere else so that I can get ahead of them and gain positions as much.
It's your dude Jay from Wolfpack, and welcome back to another episode of Performance Talk, where I bring the industry to you and some motivation too. So look, you never know where you're going to find performance. It could be in a garage, it could be at the track, or just in the studio. But either way it goes, we're going to get you where you need to go. So let's get on with the show. Welcome back to another episode of Performance Talk, and today we are like doing record breaking. We have our first professional carter, Joshua Bagumbe. And I say that right? Correct me if I didn't, because everybody needs to know your last name. Is it correct? Is that right?
Bagumbe.
There we go. So everybody get it right, because the young man is up and coming and he will be on higher stages. How are you doing today, gentlemen?
We are very good. Thank you, Josh.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And we are joined by Mike, which is the father, the sponsor, the financier, along with Delina, doing all of that for Joshua, right? These are your primary sponsors, right? So you don't want to get anything wrong, right, Joshua?
Absolutely. Parents first, sponsors second.
That's right. That is fact. All right. So question I got for you, Joshua, everybody's going to be wondering is, how was it for you? Like, to me and to several others, rightfully so, Lewis Hamilton is by far the GOAT, Formula One, most accomplished driver on and off the track. But how was it for you having the experience of not only being around him, but being in a Formula One garage, being around that atmosphere, being around what you probably definitely aspire to be to one day? I know some people kart and they go different ways, but I assume you want to be in Formula One. So how was that experience for you overall?
I loved it. I sat there in the garage. It was an amazing experience. It looks similar to what it is on TV, but there's so much more in it. There's so many more people involved in working with the car, even on the engineering side, just speaking to the drivers. There's so many people there working. It's mad.
So it was you. That's what I was going to ask you. So was it really busy? It was mad for you versus like, what did you think it was going to be like when you stepped inside of a garage for your first time? I know you watch on TV, but what did you think the atmosphere was going to be like?
I thought it was going to be definitely a bit more relaxed, because there was quite a few people rushing around getting parts and stuff. So I thought it could be a bit more relaxed, but obviously in karting, you don't have pit stops. Yes. But in Formula One racing, you do. So that's that also makes it, you rush around more, get tires and stuff. So,
okay. So you're going to be on the driver aspect. Did that give you a little bit more appreciation for maybe components that will be around you that may aid you in your future driving career one day? Did you at all think about all the people or all the parts that may have to come together in order for you to be successful on that stage?
At the start, not really. I was trying to get to the front and do as best as I can without thinking of costs or anything. Just trying to do the best that I can. So, yeah.
All right. So, Mike, Joshua, on that end, how do you feel? How is it for you? You know, you're a Black family in motorsports. We already know Lewis Hamilton. You know, we got Bubba Wallace. We have very few prominent, like, leader Black drivers in motorsports. Lewis Hamilton is probably the only one. You know, you can look across many different levels of motorsports, but Lewis Hamilton by far in the front of his field. How do you feel as far as the support from the sport that you're in and the surrounding environment going forward?
Oh, you know what? I will say it's an extremely complex environment. You know, so we're still an event in this sport, in the sport of motorsport. So when we started karting with Josh, there were areas of the country where there's certain karts, sort of kart tracks, as part of the competitions, the national competitions that he takes, where when you get there, everybody's staring at you. You're still an event. It's like, okay. You know, it's like, oh, it's a Black folk here, you know, and it's one of those sort of things. And the moment you see another one of these, of course, we do the nod, you do the acknowledgement. Yeah. But they are so few far in between, right? So it's complex in multiple ways. So there's that, the aspect that there's not many of us in there. It's if you've played any team sport, you know, where I'll speak from football or what you guys call soccer. You've got people in different positions, so you're all participating to do one thing. Motorsport is slightly different because it's just the driver, right?
Okay.
Everyone will tell you it's a team sport. Yes, there's a team surrounding you, but ultimately it's about that driver, right?
Right.
And so it's actually not that much a team sport. It's a little selfish, you know, so everyone's looking out for that driver, that individual, that person. That creates its own set of complexities. I mean, genuinely, as we talk, I can get into so many more layers as to how complex, how different it is. But how do we feel overall? It's it was difficult to begin with, and it's one of those where you have to dig your heels in and press ahead. You know,
press ahead. Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah. So when Joshua, when you're getting ready to race, like you already noticed and you've already made comment to the fact that when you went to a Formula One garage, it was like totally, it was mad. All of those things on a smaller level, probably in karting, are still going on with our teams and people running around trying to get their kids ready, trying to get their drivers ready to hit the track. What are the things that you think about the night before and before you set out on the track? Where is your mind?
Well, like the night before, I'm kind of thinking, okay, I'm kind of going around the track in my head, and then thinking, okay, I'm going to break here. And even at like the start of a race, I think, okay, on the first lap, I know everyone's going to go there. I can try and make a move somewhere else so that I can get ahead of them and gain positions as much as I can on the first lap.
Mm. I tell you, Jerick, it's a lot more cerebral than I realized, right? Yeah. Before, having never been a driver myself, more of a spectator, you sort of think that you get on track and you work it out, right? but these guys are thinking about absolutely everything. You know, he's dreaming about breaking points. He's sort of calculating four corners ahead, or this is what he tells me, yeah. You know, and then working things out as it goes from there. But there's a lot more thinking. In fact, what happened? We were at a track once, and he wasn't having a very good race, were you?
No.
And what was it? Your mechanic said to you?
I wasn't thinking properly, and I wasn't thinking where am I going to break. I wasn't thinking where I should turn. I was more kind of going with it and just driving.
Yeah, he wasn't thinking. So you were told you were driving instinctively, you weren't driving smartly. Yeah. And so the moment you made that switch that day, everything changed. Everything changed, didn't it?
So did you feel that everything changed, but mentally, what did you feel? Like, did you feel like everything changed as far as how you perceive the track, the drivers around you? Like, what was that feeling like once you got back on track and you implemented that advice and you actually put it to forth? How did you feel as a driver?
When I got the advice, I was, so as I said, everything changed. But it changed like, okay, I need to start thinking more. And now I need to think, where am I going to break? Where am I going to turn? But with the like about the other drivers, I think of it as every other practice session. So I'm not competitively racing against them. Of course, in the last lap, I'm focused. I need to win and stuff like that. So I the drivers are not. It's not that's not the issue. It's more me knowing where the track goes and how to do that how to go around that track as fast as I can.
Okay, Mike, how are y'all preparing for this? Like, y'all are going to several tracks. Like, some drivers have sims, or some drivers that just have the budget to travel around to the different tracks that are going to be scheduled. Like, how are you preparing Joshua for this? Or Joshua preparing for all these tracks? Are y'all getting there early? Are y'all actually having sims? Or what's going on with the preparation for these tracks?
That's a great question. And for your viewers, let's give you an indication of what a race weekend is like, or even the preparation for the race weekend. And that should give you the context, I think, that hopefully answers that question. So typically what happens is when you know there's a track that's on the schedule, you would go a couple of weekends before if there is a local race taking place there, right? So not part of the championship. And you would go a day before that race to do testing. And testing, you're effectively getting used to the track, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And then you would attend the local race so that you could get a feel of what it's like with traffic. Yeah.
Okay.
And people that know the track
and other people who know the track well, you know, so you get a real feel of that. And by the way, one of the things to watch out for is never copy, because it doesn't mean that they're good on that track. You know, getting a feel of what it's like with traffic, right? And so then when it's on race weekend, typical race weekend is Friday is practice.
Saturday is one round.
Saturday they do the first round. They do the heats, they do the qualifying, and then they do the race, the final. And then Sunday they sort of replicate the same thing for it. So there's two rounds at each track in the different parts of the country. So you can see where some people will have an advantage because these tracks aren't very nearby, right? So they're up to 8 hours drive away, you know, and that's a lot for us. I mean, in the US, I gather you guys drive.
No, that's a lot for me. I say after 6 hours, I'm trying to hit a plane.
Right, exactly, right? So they're really far away. So to go for a test weekend first, then you come back, then you go for that whole weekend, that Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Now, you imagine people who can test more than once, they're always, that's a bit of an advantage, right? We literally test once, and then we go off and race. And we're lucky that in that session, Josh really just soaks everything up about them. Absolutely. Every braking point, tire temperatures, gearing, all that sort of stuff. We're lucky we have a driver that can come and feed back. In fact, we had a race last weekend where the whole weekend we were like, Josh, you're not driving really well. You're not driving really well. And he kept saying, I'm not getting enough speed. What were you saying?
I'm not getting enough speed on the straights.
I
insisted on it a whole time. And as soon as we changed it, so I got more speed in the straights, I went so much better.
So we changed the gearing. Josh came and told me to change the gearing, that we were on the wrong gearing. And we were like, no, this is the right gearing. But Josh was like, no, it's not. Out the corners, I'm fine. But as soon as I hit the straight, it's not picking up. So we listened, changed the gearing, and you smashed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
That's good. So you're very, Joshua, you, as far as being providing feedback, as well as already thinking about the track and your corners and your braking points, you also are connected with trying to feel what's going on with the car and relaying that information back. So how do you as a driver feel like you're relaying this information, but maybe it's not being perceived just correctly? Like, how do you carry on maturely in order to like say, hey, I need to get my point across. What do you do as far as that? Cause you still got a level of respect, you know, your parents, you get your driver, your coaches. How do you try to relay that as strongly as possible, but as respectfully as you can?
I'll go around the track, and then when I come in and the session's over, I'll immediately say, like, I feel like I'm not getting enough at the corners. I need more at the corners. And then I'll compare it to other drivers that I've been behind. Some of them I've overtaken, but just even been behind them for a lap or so, I'll see where I'm losing time. Like, it could be on the exit of a corner. I'll be losing too much time. So we have to change the sprocket to adjust to that. So
what about tire pressures?
The tire pressures, you can, some tires, they'll go off. So they won't, you won't have the same amount of grip for the duration of the race. Some of them will drop off and you'll start losing grip. So you can adjust the tire pressures to make it stay the same grip for the duration of the race, or make it go. So at the start, you got a lot of grip, and then it just kind of dies down towards the end of the race.
Okay. So Mike, Joshua is thinking about all this. Like, he's thinking about how to win, how to be the best. But what I would like to know is, how did you and Delina decide as parents that you were going to allow Joshua to start on this journey of becoming a professional driver? Because there are risks involved in everything we do. But I always tell people there's a certain different level of risk involved when you know you're purposely having to put yourself in danger in order to be the best in what you want to do. How did you all have this conversation and come to the answer to say yes?
Yeah, I think another... Really, clearly you're a parent, right? Because then you wouldn't be asking that if you weren't. And you can imagine going to a track, and every time you get to a track, there are two ambulances at the track. And the worst thing is they get used, right? So it's not like they're there for decoration. They actually get used. Now, as a parent, you've got to ask yourself, why would I put my child in this situation? You know, when he was 9 years old, what is a nine-year-old doing going around a 60-degree corner at 70 miles per hour? You know, you wouldn't do that as a grown-up. Why is a child doing that, right? So those are real questions that we did ask ourselves at the very beginning. And I do remember one of the things we're quite insistent on is we let our children try as many things as possible. Right. And with Joshua, when he tried this, he seemed to excel. And we don't push, because if we feel we're not trying to live our dreams through the our children, it's got to be something that they're passionate about. If they don't show the passion, we're not going to show the financial passion. We're not going to, you know, it's one of those sort of things. But Josh was in this fully. Now, with motorsport, because of the cost of it, we had to have another conversation, right?
There's,
you have all the passion in the world, but if you're coming last, this might just not be for you. It's a great hobby, but it's a very expensive hobby, right?
Right.
So unfortunately, Josh, well, and fortunately, just started winning all his races, right? From the very beginning, he was a contender. That made it difficult because he's got passion and he's got the ability, the gift, right? Yeah. Are you humble?
Yes, he is. Very humble. I like it.
So that combination made it, you know, it's a no-brainer, to be honest. Okay. You know, he's going to put the work in. And to be honest, there's a couple of other things that I'll say. I will say this in front of him so he can hear. Academics is first in our household.
That's what I was going to ask. Okay.
Right. But here, that Joshua is voluntarily taking himself at lunchtime to finish all his work was very moving as a parent, because that meant he understood the assignment, right? Academics first, then we can deal with racing later. And so there's no slippage on that side of things, which as a parent will only encourage you to support their activities and the things that they want to do.
Right.
So, I think I can say that in front of him because I'm very, very proud. That,
you should be, man. Definitely. Yeah. And Joshua, that brings this question back to you, because that is exactly what was coming up next. How old are you now?
I'm 12 now.
Okay, you're 12 now. At 12 years old, I was not doing what you were doing, nor did I have the support. So I want to say that you are very blessed for that, to have both your parents there, both supporting you doing something. I can say that at 12, I was in a place where I was escaping, whether I wasn't going to make it incarceration or winding up in the wrong thing. So I'm very proud and happy to see a family like yours promoting and doing very positive things and investing in your future. But that it also, if you realize it or not, that responsibility lies on you. How are you managing the golden era of childhood on top of being involved in a sport that is very time consuming and physically consuming? How are you managing that day in and day out?
Well, I don't know. It's very physical sport, but the school that we go to is very, they're very physical as well. So they exercise you, and everyone's gets their course, and you have to do like certain things to make sure that you're like strong enough to like achieve what you want.
And so what about that balance academically and physically as well?
Yeah.
How do you manage that?
Academically, I try like as hard as I can. No matter what, if I don't like the subject or enjoy the subject, just try my absolute hardest, 100% every time. And then even when I get home, if I'm struggling with something, I'll either ask for help or at least like Google it or something and try to get it and understand before I go back and do it in class.
So you actually use the internet for other things aside from just games. You actually use it for education, because a lot of kids these days, they just don't use it for education. So that's very good to hear. How are you dealing with the fact that you do have to choose, right? Like, if you're going to get better at what you're doing, there comes a choice between, I just want to go recreationally play in the street or at the playground or whatever, or I want to hone my craft in. So how are you balancing that?
What do you mean? Like,
playing with friends just randomly and just consistently, or actually going to work on what you want to be better in, what you want to be the best in?
Well, I play with my friends because it's also important to be and have friends that you enjoy playing with and spend some time away from everything else and like kind of just be with your friends. So I do spend time with my friends as well, but not as often as some of them do. Some of them, like every week or every two weeks, they're together. So I'm with them quite a lot at school as well. We're in the same, like, similar classes, and so I see them quite a lot still.
Okay.
You asked the question. Sorry, let me jump in there. Sorry if that's okay. You asked the question earlier, which I don't think I gave the answer to, because you mentioned simulator work,
right?
And actually, Josh does have a sim, but we went through a phase where he had to stop that because it was creating a lot of bad habits. Yeah.
Explain that. Elaborate on that.
Yeah. So driving in a sim is never the same as driving in a car, unless you can pay £40,000 for a simulator, right? So then you've got a better sim, but it's never the same. And I think having not been a driver, if I'm at the track, I'll tell you the difference between being at the track and watching it on TV, because we watch him on TV as well. Right. You can smell the exhaust. You can hear the engines. You can even, there's just a taste in the air of certain things, you know. The weather, you can see it. You can feel the wind. You can feel the heat. The ground, is it dry? Is it not dry? All your senses are stimulated when you're at the track. And in terms of communication, that speaks very differently to you as a parent, as a mechanic. So as a parent, I can watch the timing screen, I can watch the screen, and I'm not worried. If Delina's at the track, she can see that gray cloud coming and know that he's on slicks. And she's like, there's a little panicky, right? You know, and I'll never get that emotion. Whereas he can, which also means that the conversation he's having with the car is very, very different when compared to a sim, you know. And so what I like is the way Joshua glues himself with the car, and they have this relationship. And when he's on the sim, he loses that a bit. So he's now himself taken a measured approach to how much he's on the sim and versus how much he's on the car.
Yeah.
You know? I love that. That is a very critical and good point, because I've always said the same thing. Like, a simulator cannot anywhere be the same as actually being on track. But the way you packaged that, Mike, was beautiful, and people probably really will appreciate that. And that also is going to bring me to this, because we were talking about Joshua, like, handling and balancing everything. But you two as parents, balancing everything with feeding a household, making sure not just Joshua, but the other kids are furthering themselves in whatever direction they want to. Talk to the audience a little bit about logistic nightmares, if there are, financial investments, safety equipment, like all these things that are going on that people might not be aware of. Like, you just can't get a car, and we're just like, explain these things about what you routinely have to do and pay for in order to, you know, to get your son to where he hopefully will get, where he's working to get.
Yeah, no, that's great. And to any parent out there, whatever advice you can share, please share, because parenting, as you know, is a constantly learning journey. It's like driving on the motorway. It's constant calibration. You can't just say, I've got it, and it's gonna get there. And we have two other children, the two younger boys. None of them have taken the same interest in motorsport, which I'm not complaining about, given the cost of this sport. I'm really not worried about that, right? So that I'm okay with that completely. However, as parents, we do have to balance the timing that we have with our children. As I explained to you, Joshua is away from at least once a month. He's away from Thursday night to Sunday night with one parent. And then, of course, there's testing time. And testing, when he goes testing at a different track, that's a whole day, you know.
Right.
So that's a Saturday that the other two boys are either not with mom or not with dad, right? So we have to be, as parents, incredibly intentional about our balance of time and balance of effort, right? Because Joshua also is much more publicly recognized than the other two and therefore gets opportunities like this more frequently than the others do. But we're deliberately trying to build them up as individuals, and therefore they get their own time with mom and dad. They are their own people, their own circle, and they all support each other in whatever endeavor it is that they're doing. You know, Josh has to get excited about going to a Rubik's Cube competition with Caleb, because, you know, Caleb gets excited about supporting Joshua when he's on the track, you know. Yeah. So the family has to build those values in very, very intentionally. Now, do we get it right all the time? I can't say we do.
Yeah.
But it's just that you, what we try and be really good at is reading the signals. You know, if we're like, I don't know, even if we feel we've spent enough time with the other two, they may be a little thing that's demonstrating that we're not. So actually, let's switch something up here right now. You know, let's do something. So that's what we try and do. So that's the parenting side of things. You also asked about the costs.
Right.
Now let's get into that. This is where it gets tense, right? Exactly. get strapped in. So there's several different series of sort of karting levels that you can participate in before you jump into cars. Okay. They tend to be by age group, engine size, and so forth, right? Now, before Joshua was in this particular or level or category, thank you, son. The one he was in below was for people who are up to the age of 12, I believe.
Okay.
Now, the average cost to participate in one of those championships is £30,000 a year. That's the average cost. So, I'll just say that again. £30,000 a year, okay? Now, this is where you understand a bit about motorsport. Mm-hmm. The kids who were performing really, really well, were spending £90,000 a year.
Whoa.
All right?
Whoa.
So if someone asks, what's all that money doing, right?
Right.
So I'll explain. You've got... You own your cart, right? Or you own your chassis. Some people have several chassis because there are, you know, every time there's an accident, a small bend may cost you a small tenth of a second, right? Damn. You know, so some have multiple chassis. We only have one chassis, right? And so we have to rebend it if anything happens, and then we got to do all of that.
Right.
And so there's chassis. Then there's tires. Every race, pretty much, you need a new set of tires.
Yeah.
That's about £400, right?
In this category.
Okay, especially in this category. After you've done a race, that's it. The tires are done, you know.
They're old.
Yeah, all right. They're gone. They're old. You throw them away. Nothing you can do about that. And tires make a difference. We've seen it in Formula One. We've seen it
everywhere. Yes.
So you need a new set of tires. You need wets. You need dry. It rains all the time in the UK. So you never know what tires you need. You need to take them all, right? So you need intermediates, wets, and slicks. Then there's any incidents. Things go wrong. People hit you. You hit people. Or even sometimes you just hit a divot, you know, and something bends. So there's always a couple of £100 spent on different components, a little screw here, a little axle here, or a rod here, or any of those sort of things. And there's the mechanic, right? A mechanic will cost you about £800 to £1,000 a weekend. And you have your same mechanic, right?
Okay.
The mechanics are really important because they're the ones that when Joshua says, I don't have enough grip, or my rear grip isn't as loose as I want it to be.
Right.
They're the ones who have to make all those really fine adjustments, right? And they have to do it quickly. Because you don't always have that window to make a change and then relax. You've got to make a change, get back into the cart for the next session before you've even had time to test it.
Damn. Okay? Yeah.
Then there's testing, right? Whenever we go to a track for testing, that's about £800, right? Because
every time you go testing.
Yeah. You know, so because that's the track, that's everybody going around. That's a ton of money, right?
Right.
So you can see the money's mounting up. Now, those who are paying even more, they're booking out the whole track for testing as much as possible, right? You know? And then, I haven't even mentioned engines, right? So engines is another one. We had, four or five engines, right?
Four or five engines.
Now, every time news travels that an engine has been on a dyno and can go that tenth quicker, the price for that engine hits in the region of £10,000 to £15,000, usually even £20,000.
This is a V8?
No, this is a lawnmower engine, by the way. Yeah, so that's even worse, right? Because it's a lawnmower engine, but it goes a tenth faster, right?
Right.
No,
it's true lawnmower.
So okay, go ahead, keep going.
I mean, I haven't even finished, right? So then what the rich kids will do is every engine that they hear about, they'll buy them all. So that no one can compete, no one can get those engines. And they literally keep them in the cupboard, right? Yeah, they buy them all, keep them in the cupboard, because then they know they've got the fastest engines on the track. And then what's a good thing, though, however, is like, because Josh won several championships at that age, his engines are now deemed valuable because Josh used them, right? So any leader at the front, it's another way we make our money back, is their engines increase in value when you sell them. So that's quite good. The trouble is you put them on a dyno and someone else has put theirs on a dyno and theirs are faster, no one's going to buy your engine. You know, right. And that's only at that point they realize, shucks, it must have been the driver because this engine's a dog. It's not doing anything on the dyno, right? So how on earth is Joshua
People Whitman don't believe this? In that these days, but it really is true. The drivers matter.
The drivers matter, right? So,
it's the driver.
Yeah.
The engine.
So I think, and then there's hotel costs every time you travel. There's the driving up costs. You know, and it does mount up. You can get away with about between 30 and 40,000 pounds. You can get away with it. But to be competitive, you're really looking at a bit more than that. You know, and that's before we get to the next categories where the price just continues to go up and to the right. It's more.
And for what reasons would the price continue to go up because of the different category? Because people aren't going to understand that. They're going to hear 30 or 40,000 pounds and probably assume like, okay, well, even if I can't afford that, then I can get you through the rest. But explain to them why that will not carry you to the next level.
Okay, so the engines get bigger. The engines get more expensive. The tires get fatter and bigger. They're also tires get more. Every component gets a little bit more expensive.
Gotcha.
And then new chassis as well. And then you get little things where like a little bolt, little screw, right?
Right.
You can use the standard one, or you can use the titanium one,
which the light is one. Give you less weight.
The lock one.
Yeah, the titanium lock one, which is 700. It's the same screw, right? But it makes a difference. You're trying to get every, because it's such a margin sport. So it's, you know, every tenth counts, you know. It's a bit like athletics where what you wear, your hair and or swimming, right? Everything, every little bit that buys you a tenth, you pay more money, right? So that's how the costs go up. Now, that's local championships, national championships. Now, when you go to Europe, it's a completely different kettle of fish. When you're in Europe, karting in Europe, there's more classes, but then also it's about £15,000 for one weekend. Yeah. So you can see when Lewis Hamilton says this is a billionaire kid's sport, right?
It really is,
isn't it? Yeah, because you get filtered out. Who's got £15,000
for
1 weekend?
3 days.
My gosh!
You know,
£15,000 for 3 days.
Yeah.
And no one talks about this. This is information that no one really shares. So when they say I remember when we were getting into it, they were like, "It's an expensive sport." And Delina and I, well, we've done okay in life. We might be able to do this.
Right.
No. What they meant when they meant expensive was different level. Tell them about the kids who arrive. We arrive in a van. How do some of the kids arrive?
Motorhomes, massive motorhomes.
You know, £500,000 motorhomes. You know, with everything, all the bells and the whistles.
You talking about with all the garage and the whole?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We show up in a van, right? Small van. What about those two who showed up in the helicopter?
Helicopter.
So you can see it's a. You know, a couple of those kids, their dads or their parents are worth £400 million. You know, so you can see who you're playing against.
Right.
Talent doesn't always win. Someone says you can buy talent because you can spend more on testing, you can spend more on what. And then there's the fact that you can't even put the talent in the cart, right? So as good as you are, you can't put the talent in the cart if you don't have £15,000 a weekend, right?
Right.
You know.
Man, Joshua, oh my gosh. Yeah, that's I just calculated a McLaren. Like when you just talking, I was thinking about a McLaren 720. I just thought about it. But Joshua, let me ask you this, because when you're in the home, you go out, your dad commented earlier that it's like an event. And if you don't know what that is, like an event, like you show up and you're an eyeball, similar to like even when women show up to a track, they're also an event still to this day. Yeah. How often do you step on the grid or to the track and see people that resemble or look like you, Joshua? How often is that? Not often at all. Very often. So.
People that look like these, very rare.
Okay.
There's barely anyone on the track that's black. It was a load of white people. So whenever you're walking around, you get funny looks because it's so rare to see a black person on the grid.
How does that make you feel? Like in race day, you still have to undergo that if it's happening. And how do you mentally get over that so that you can perform your best?
It encourages me, really, because it seems like I'm already being watched for a bad reason, but I want to be watched for a better reason, and because I'm good, not because of my race.
Love it. So, Mike, are there things that you and Delina are actually involved in or doing to kind of bridge these gaps to try to, like, you know, make things more equal and understanding? Like, are there things that you're involved in or doing that kind of are leaning towards that? Or are you kind of just, I'm just a parent in the motorsports supporting my child as a driver?
No, that's I like that question, because one of the things we're very intentional as a family is that we don't like the idea of pulling the ladder up, right? Okay. This thing of, hey, in case members of your audience aren't familiar with the analogy, it's that idea of you've made it, and therefore you pull the ladder, so none of us can climb up as well. We're very much about keeping that, bringing as many ladders as possible, right? You know, so exposing some of the roots to the sport and things like that. So I do, there's two things that I'm involved in. We set up what we called the Motorsport Foundation. It was originally called BAME Motorsport Foundation, but it's having a name change. And that was really to gather dads and other parents. I say dads, and I should take that back, actually. That was to gather parents. Right. And let me tell you why I'm taking that back. Because in most situations, it is that the dad is at the track, right? With the son. But actually, we're quite unique that it's Delina who is at the track more than I am, you know? And that's for a multitude of reasons. But actually, it works quite well, you know, that she's there. And it does break the stereotype, because everyone's like, oh, no, women are. But no, she's into it. She's all over it, you know? And I will be honest, as she's not in the room, having my wife at the track is absolutely essential, because when we get grief and when we get what, she knows when to turn on, what she needs to turn on to make sure nobody's messing with our kid, you know? You know, and it does get messy at the track sometimes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I've seen some videos.
It gets messy. So having her there is absolutely fantastic. She's the right person to be there, I would say, on many of those occasions. So yeah, so we set up this foundation where we could gather parents to sort of share our experiences and expose more of the journey, because it's a very secretive society. People don't tell you, you know, the routes that you need to go to end up here. There's championships that are happening that no one knows about, you know, and it's all shared within specific circles. What's the route to F1, you know? And that's not very clear at all. So it's almost a group to sort of encourage, share resources so that we can help each other, right? There's talent out there. And also as a result of that, the governing body here for motorsport in the UK, I'm the chair of the Racial Diversity Committee. So,
awesome.
So what we're doing there is looking to try and increase participation in the world of motorsport. And I say world because it's not just drivers, it's engineers. You know, it's a whole economy, right? True. It's people in marketing. It's people who are in communication, event planning. There's even catering, right? Physiology, psychology, mental health. You know, you can imagine if your head's not in the game, you're not going to turn that corner at the speed that you need to turn the corner.
Yeah, confidence is not going to be there.
It's not going to be there. And there's confidence, and then there's how brave are you to break at that point? Because if you, you know, there's a wall right in front of you. Right? Right. So there's a whole economy of skills and you know, if you like, roles that people can participate in. And when we don't feature anywhere, you know, and who's to say we don't have psychologists, we don't have caterers, we don't have marketing, we don't have comms, we don't have engineers. We have all of that. Then why are we missing from all of that? So our role really is to try and build a better understanding empirically, because I think emotionally and internally we know the barriers. But what we have to do is build an empirical understanding, as in an undeniable understanding of the barriers, communicate that to the execs within that governing body, and help them with the strategic efforts to increase participation in motorsport. you know. And
man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And how do you feel the progress thus far is going? Like, you being involved to that level, which is awesome, and I applaud you for it, bro.
Thank you.
But how do you feel the process is going? How do you feel the progress is going? Not only just the process, but also the progress in that is going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, let's when Lewis was called the N-word by Nelson Piquet. I don't know if you remember that.
I also remember Black Flacer at the Spaniard GP. I remember a lot of that.
Yeah, you know, so Lewis recently said, you know what, we spent enough time learning. We've got to act right now.
Right.
And we do need to keep our foot proverbially on the gas, you know, if we're talking metaphorically in the same way. We can't let up, you know, we have to keep our because it's difficult. It's a journey. It's a journey for which some people are significantly more advanced on than others. Then others in some situations feel a little threatened, you know, like you're coming to take more pieces of the pie when we need to educate people to understand the pie is bigger than you realize. Right. So
right.
You're not losing any pieces. Don't worry about that. You know, there's more to go around, you know? And so progress wise, I'm impatient. I would always want it to be faster.
Okay.
I think, you know, there's areas where it can be faster. But remember, with anything that's also an emotional journey, you do have to sort of tread as carefully as you can to bring people along on that journey as well.
True.
You know? So that's those are the challenges for any sort of social justice initiative that you're working on. It rarely happens immediately. Yeah,
that is very true. I mean, you can go back to Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Garvey, all of them, and it's just, if you look at the amount of time that we have extending all the way back from then to now, you would think progress should be beyond great, and it hasn't been. So the fact that you have the discipline, determination to do so, and Joshua, you have also that couple determination and motivation to do what you're doing. I'm going to ask you this because I got to put you on the spot because I heard what you said, bro. Joshua, I heard you say that you was going to one-up Lewis Hamilton on the World Championships. I did hear you say that correctly, right? You did say that. You said you were going to one-up him. If he get 8, you got to get 9. If he get 10, you got to get 11. Yeah. What are you going to do to prepare and bring that type of tenacity to your career? Like, what do you believe, as Joshua say to yourself every day, this is what it's going to take for me to reach that level of excellence?
I think perseverance mostly, because if you have one bad moment, one bad weekend, you can't let it go, and you have to keep on that. It's like, oh, this is why I had a bad weekend. I need to. I'll do better. And where I've made the mistakes. And we also have a motto: always forward. So it's like he was saying earlier, and don't look back.
We look back to learn, right?
Yeah, yeah. Concentrate forwards. Concentrate on what's ahead of you and what's to come. So.
And that's exactly what I said, Mike. I'm glad you said that, because Joshua and I were having a conversation earlier, and I was saying, like, you know, you don't want to look back too many times or else you get slowed up. But like you just said, you look back to learn. And Joshua had mentioned that I'll look back maybe once to see and gauge the distance on where they are. And then after that, I'm just pushing forward. Yeah. And I think it's awesome just in this small amount of time to see how the learnings that you are passing to your children are actually manifesting themselves in the way they think and speak and act. So I applaud you and Delina for doing what you are doing, because it is working. And bringing that point in, I want people to understand this. This is not always a situation where you see a Black family participating in something and it's like this sob story. Like, you all as a family are not sitting on the corner like begging for an opportunity. You're actually taking it into your hands and financially finding out how you're going to make it happen and raising a family and actually doing it. And that's something that I also want to commend you on, because I think people get that flip-flopped and kind of deranged and messed up anytime they see you. Oh, it's got to be a charity case. No, like, you're actually earning your own way. And yeah, opportunities happen to nobody, no matter what financial bracket they lie in. Like, everybody has to have an opportunity to get a chance. So I really applaud that. So with saying that, I'm going to I'm gonna pose something to you, and you let me know what you think, because I think you're a better mind to answer it because of what you're involved in. And I've often said that I think that Formula One needs programs to find drivers that we are missing that could be legendary, like Joshua and others, but may not have even the footing that you or I have to even get into the sport. And I think it would do the sport some good to find these drivers, because we could be missing the next great driver. I'm not going to say the next Lewis Hamilton, because Lewis Hamilton is his own. That's his own mold. Right. But we're thinking for a next great driver that's going to be legendary like Joshua in his own right.
Yeah.
Do you believe that this is something that Formula One or these organizations should look into actually doing to develop programs to maybe give bumps to those who can get into the sport?
I absolutely think so. You know, I think it's necessary that, you know, with when we open up every closed universe or closed world to the more diverse capabilities and possibilities that are out there, everybody wins, right? The sport will win. The sport will be better off as a result of that. Look how well the sport has done because of Lewis being involved. You know, so yes, he's got his own personal accolades. Where is the sport now because of Lewis Hamilton? You know, and I think that's a huge transformation. There was a time, if we look back, this is going to expose my age, where rallying was more popular than F1.
Facts.
During my lifetime. Yeah. You know, and the opening up of that diversity where they had even wider nations participating in F1, bringing audiences from South America, from Asia, from Africa, has completely changed that landscape. F1 is now this glamorous thing that everybody looks at beyond any other motorsport that you can. It's the pinnacle, you know.
Right.
It's the pinnacle right now. And so the sport will not lose. It will only gain by, you know, opening up its doors, seeking to be more diverse. You look at the what they're doing in terms of the W Series. I love what they're doing, the W Series with women.
Right.
Because they really, it's one of those sports, to be honest, where your gender shouldn't matter at all, you know? And so opening up those doors just opens a whole world of possibility, a whole world of things that we have never seen before that we could see and learn from. So I'm excited about that, but it will take work. And, you know, it's as with many of these things, sometimes there's a lot of people who are going to put in a lot of effort for us to take the next step. Then we need others to do the other bit to take the next step. And that's how we move forward. You know,
I wish I could believe that.
But yeah, we need to do something.
Definitely. And that's very good. You mentioned the WCs. Like, I've had Amber. She does NASCAR, first Canadian woman in NASCAR.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sonya Slice, Tom Attack, and I've been definitely doing due diligence, trying to get W Series on just to get their perspective, because there is power in identifying, right? And I have daughters, so to have a woman come on and speak about their journey and what they had to do to make it, not as just a woman, but as a driver. And that's what I try to do when I have women on, is like, you're a professional driver. Like, we're not looking just for when we're looking at a professional driver, but you can't help but they go through these obstacles in being women when the car doesn't care.
Yeah.
The track doesn't even care.
Absolutely.
Like, none of that matters. The only thing that matters is, can I operate this machinery to its peak capabilities and maximize my potential? And that does not have a gender. That only has skill and capability.
Yeah.
So people definitely need to get over on that. And I really like that you said that. And I do want to get on a little something that you mentioned, just to give people a better window in case some people are wondering.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just before you get there, let's make an attempt. Let's try and get Naomi on this show. Naomi Schiff, right? She's been a racer. She's now a presenter. Her and Josh get along quite well. Let's try and get her on this show as well.
Okay.
You know, that would be really good. Yeah.
Man, I would definitely appreciate that, just for her to share that, her journey and her information. Yeah. Man, and people, if you don't know, Naomi went through something recently that nobody should ever have to go through, and she went through that because she's a Black woman and a woman, period. And then I definitely love the way she presents herself on camera, and the way she speaks to the sport. And people, when they see women on camera, they kind of think like, oh, what are they going to say? Well, they're going to speak educated because they're educated in the sport. While you sit, like I sit at home, I watch it. They're there. They performed in it, and she deserves all the respect, and so does every other woman and everybody else. Yeah. So, Mike, can you please, and Joshua, let everybody know that's watching the episode, know how they can reach you, how they can support you, because I'm already going to be telling people to support the YouTube, support the Instagram. But if there are other things you want to put before them so that they can access you and reach out to you if they want to support you, now is your time to do so. Just uncheck, go for it.
Oh, listen, that's brilliant. I think one of the things that we would absolutely love is getting people to follow Joshua's journey. You know, at least at the very least, let's all participate in that, right? Let's follow him on Instagram. And if you want to reach out, absolutely send him an email, send me an email. I think his mum's email address is on there on the Instagram, and mine is mike@mikebugembe.com. I would love to hear from anybody who's interested in the whole world of motorsport, you know, who is from what we call underrepresented communities. You know, I would love to hear any ideas on how we can increase participation. I think we're very open to that. You know, it would be remiss of me to think that we have every plan, every route. And as I said, we don't want to pull up the ladder. So right. In every sphere of motorsport, we need to get more people of our culture involved in that. There are a lot of opportunities there. So please reach out with any ideas, any thoughts, follow Joshua. And let's stay connected. I think at the very least, once we're there, I think that's all I can think of. I know my wife is going to come to me and say, why didn't you say this? I can't remember, I'm afraid. So I may have to send you an email.
That's all right. Because what I will do is I'm going to list everybody that is watching. I'm going to let you know. I'm going to make it easy for you because I don't want you to forget. I will get all of Mike's information. And once he talks to the queen, and we will put everything in the description as a hyperlink so you can click on it and go. So there will be no excuses to how hard you have to work to find or get in touch with Mike or Brilliant. Support Joshua. I'm going to put all these hyperlinks in the description. Joshua, hey man, this is your floor. What do you want to leave the people with? And consider that there could be a kid in the same age bracket or younger than you that might be watching this. What would you say to them to inspire them to go for their dreams?
Never give up. Go for what you want and not, if you don't really enjoy it, tell your parents. If you really enjoy it and you want to carry on, keep on trying as hard as you can, never give up.
I want to say something to the kids out there as well and to the families out there, actually. One of the strengths that we have as a people is storytelling. You know,
facts.
And when we tell stories like nobody else tells stories, right?
True.
Stories have this magical power of connecting rational thought with emotional thought and therefore stimulating action, increasing confidence, increasing belief. Even when Joshua is driving, I ask him, what's the story the car is telling you? You know, and then that just opens up a whole world of things like that. So I'd ask all of us to share our stories, share their own individual stories, but also here, keep an ear out for their story, because everyone has a story in this journey, in their own journey somewhere. And that kid who wants to get into motorsport needs to just hear a bit of his story, but then start looking at some of the other stories as well, you know, and then tell that story. Because even just sharing the story will stimulate yourself. If you motivate and encourage other people, you will motivate and encourage yourself. You know, so I think we shouldn't forget that it's a unique superpower that we have as a people. In every continent that we sit in Africa, we've been telling stories from way back when. In the US, we've been telling stories for generations. It's so natural to us. You don't need training in it, but we have it as a superpower. And I think we should really use that.
This brings us to another successful Performance Talk podcast. Thanks for joining the podcast family. Don't forget, if you want to enjoy the audio and visual experience of this podcast, you can go over to the Instagram page at Wolfpack Performance, where we go live Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, new episodes will drop here at wolfpackperformance.podbean.com at 12 noon on Saturdays. If you need help with your build, tips, tricks, and hacks, you can check out the YouTube channel for DIY videos at Wolfpack Performance. And like I always say, anything in life is worth building, so just build it.